Welcome to the first Immaculata Symposium. Around Thanksgiving time last year, some of the friars were talking on various subjects, and the idea came about that it would be a good apostolate for us to sponsor symposiums on various Catholic topics. And some of the questions most often asked of the friars is about the New Age. And we wanted to go to the experts, and we have with us perhaps the best expert in this country, Father Mitch Pacwa, to speak tonight on the New Age. So we welcome all of you here, and we also welcome Father Mitch here among us. We thank you very much for coming and for being our guest this evening. During the break, over this evening and tomorrow, if any of you have any questions and you'd rather not come to the microphone, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions later this evening at the microphone. But if you would rather not, you can write it down on a piece of paper, and there are some question boxes in the back where you can deposit those questions, and they'll be answered at a later time, either tonight or tomorrow. So there's very little introduction necessary for Father Pacwa. Most of you have seen him often on EWTN, and of course he is an author of books on the New Age. And Father Mitchell entered the Jesuits in 1968 and was ordained in 1976. He obtained his doctorate at Vanderbilt University in 1985 and now teaches at the University of Dallas. So without further ado, let us all welcome Father Mitchell Pacwa.
It's really is neat to be here. As a little boy, I certainly liked reading stories about whaling ships and, you know, things they did, so it's nice to be in this area. What I intend to do is cover a wide variety of topics in the New Age movement. Tonight, I'll talk about what the movement is. Tomorrow, I'll talk about in the morning, the history of it. Where did it come from? And what are some of the influences that it came from that still affect the New Age movement today? Then I also want to talk about a few other topics that are specific to interest in the Catholic community, like the Enneagram, which is very popular in Catholic circles. I'll explain what that is tomorrow and why I have some problems with it. And also Dr. Carl Jung, a Swiss psychologist, why I have some problems with his teaching. And also a few other topics like astrology and some of the occult practices, crystals that occur in the New Age movement. So those will be some of the topics for tomorrow. And let you know that we'll cover a variety of things as we go through. And today, I'd like us to focus on what the New Age is and isn't. We have to be very careful. A lot of people who would consider themselves Orthodox or conservative Catholics make a mistake in labeling anything that is dumb or stupid New Age. And that's not very wise. There are lots and lots of ways to be stupid. The New Age is only one of them. And it's important to know what it is that is New Age as distinct from other things. They're not all the same. And the reason for knowing the differences of these different movements is that when we enter into discussion with somebody who's in the New Age movement, it's very helpful to be able to speak their language, have them recognize that you know what you're talking about. You're not just sort of, you know, dismissing them and just tarring them with one brush and considering them all the same as everything else you dislike. But rather, you can enter into a dialogue and often enough, I think, put enough doubt, or at least the seeds of some doubt, that might eventually lead to their conversion back to Christ, or to Christ in the first place if they'd never known him. And that's what our goal is. It's not to get rid of the New Agers. I hope that's not your goal. It's not my goal. I don't want to get rid of them. I want to convert them. I want them to become good Catholics. That's my goal. And I think that if we learn what they actually believe and teach, that we might be better at, you know, their conversion. Also, if we understand some of the dynamics of why they're in the New Age movement and why they practice some of the things they do, what they find attractive, that helps us to understand them and perhaps better communicate with them about why Christ, Jesus our Lord, really satisfies what they're looking for far more than anything that Shirley MacLaine can offer. So my first task tonight is to define what the New Age movement is. And I have 4 points that most of the people I know who studied New Age movement like that these 4 points. This is a good summary and synthesis of the New Age movement. First of all, it's a movement, not an organization. Secondly, it's the first belief of this movement is that everything in the world is one being. That's a doctrine called monism. Thirdly, this one being, everything in the world is God. That's called pantheism. And fourthly, they expect a new age to come. That's why they're not called New Age, because they teach new ideas. That's not about the New Age. They expect a new age, the age of Aquarius, to come. And they're going to help us all get there. Okay? So those are the 4 main things. I'd like to talk about each one of those points in detail. The first point, that this is a movement rather than an organization. Sometimes people ask me if the New Age movement is part of the Masonic Lodge. I don't think so. The reason is that the Masons are too well organized. The New Agers aren't. The New Agers are hippies who have grown up, you know, gotten older anyway, and who need to make a living at being a hippie in a way. And they're doing their own thing. This is a movement of a lot of individuals and small groups rather than one large organization controlled by any one individual. I know that some people like Constance Cumby, one of the first Christian critics of the New Age movement and who alerted so many of us to study this movement. Constance Cumby has said that the New Age movement is a conspiracy. But most of us who study the New Age movement don't see the evidence for the conspiracy. For the most part, it seems to be a lot of individuals and small groups, you know, doing their own things and making up their own religion as they go along. But while saying that, we also have to be aware that it is not an insignificant movement. Any of you on the internet? Do you have access to the internet? Raise your hands. Look around for the New Age websites. They're all over the place. I don't know if you look on the Microsoft internet system. They have a whole big sections of New Age. Matter of fact, I just wanted to look up, I was in the health, I didn't know where to find them exactly. I looked in health, because that's one of their popular areas. And then when I clicked on New Age Health, it said, do you want to get into the New Age section? You know, just click this button. So I did. And shoot, it just was unbelievable. I didn't have time to look at it all. There's a lot of stuff on the internet. The New Age book industry has been in the early 90s, I don't know what it is now, I suspect it's gotten bigger. In the early 90s, the New Age book industry was $4 billion a year. In the mid 90s, the angel book business was $7 billion. And most of that angel stuff was not from our side. I guarantee you that, as they say in Louisiana, that if most of that angel nonsense with angels on the other side channeling messages contradicting the gospel of Christ our Savior, and that was a $7 billion, not million, dollar a year industry. And the workshop industry in the New Age movement is another $4-4.5 billion a year. Now, when they did a survey on religions in this country, one of the things they discovered is that 2% of the country is new, admits to being New Age. Not even that. Not even 2%. It's just like, really, there's some ridiculously small number. Now, no way that those people are spending all those billions of dollars themselves. The New Age movement has a few hardcore members doing their own thing, and lots and lots and lots of dabblers. Oh, this sounds different. I'll try that. That is typical. The description of, this is different. Different from what? You know, but it's different. That's enough of a description for some people. And they'll dabble in the New Age movement. And that's where most of the money comes from. You go to the big bookstores. I don't know. Do you have Broder's bookstores here? No? I don't know what big company. Do you have big bookstores at all? Any big bookstore companies? Barnes and Noble's. All right. That'd be the equivalent to Broder's down in Dallas. And you look in the Barnes and Noble's bookstore. And you look, and I want you to do this. Go down there and count the size and the number of shelves where they have New Age books, and then count the size and number of Catholic books on shelves. How many shelves are filled with Catholic books? And how many of New Age? Now, Catholics compose slightly over 25% of the United States population. The New Ages claim to be just 2%. Why? And you check this out yourself, but you'll see that their bookshelves are larger than ours. And this phenomenon is around the world. I went on a round the world trip, 2 years ago, giving lectures against the New Age in Singapore, in Borneo, all 10 cities in Australia, 7 in New Zealand, and 5 in Fiji. And it was the same in Fiji. I didn't see any big bookstores, but I don't speak their language. So, but in the other countries where they speak English, it was exactly the same phenomenon. The New Age book sections in Singapore City are larger than any of the Christian ones or the Buddhist ones. This indicates how popular the movement is. They know that they can sell these books. They're not part of some conspiracy at Barnes and Noble's or Broder's or these other bookstores. They're putting out there what sells. If Catholic books and the Lives of the Saints sold more than the New Age, they'd have Lives of the Saints. They want to make a living. These people are salesmen, right? But they put out there what does sell, and it's New Age of all kinds. People are doing exactly what St. Paul warned St. Timothy about. They're going to get their ears tickled with what I call New Age featherweights. And we have to pay serious attention to the existence of this movement because it also is being introduced into Catholic circles, especially through Father Matthew Fox and his disciples and disciplettes. So it's very, very important. My first job as a novice is working with a group, a street gang, Mexican-speaking gang in Chicago. And they were Satan's disciples, and then their associates were called the disciplettes. So thought I'd just pass it on. Well, anyway, but it's Fox and his friends that, as a matter of fact, I one time did a lecture about Matthew Fox and his witch. He has a witch on his staff named Starhawk. And I did a lecture entitled Bear Fox and the Star Baby. That wasn't nice, but I did it anyway. Doesn't stop me. The point is how significant this is and what we are up against, in that we do have an obligation to stand up to the New Age movement with the Catholic faith and Catholic truth. And this is a big task for us. Not to let all of this stuff simply slide, but really to confront it. Even if it is not a big conspiracy, like Constance Cumby and others say, but it is a very significant movement, and we have a lot of work to do to fight against it. Now, my second point is how this movement is defined. It's hard to define it because so many of these people in the New Age movement are making it up as they go. And what so many commentators will point out is that the beliefs of this New Age movement are all over the place. You know, you have people contradicting each other and smiling as they do so because you can have your reality and I have my reality and it's just beautiful. Well, I think that there are some key themes underlying the movement, and one of them is the belief that everything is one. This is a philosophical position. It's called monism, from a Greek word, monos, meaning one, like mononucleosis, right? Same word, mono, monarch, and all that. That's often the word one in Greek, monos. And monism is the belief that the universe is all one being. Now, they'll take a look at a room like this, and they'll have you look around and see, looks like a lot of chairs in this room, right? Look at that wall. Looks like there are a lot of different bricks. And if you look closely at the floor, you would see a lot of specks of dirt and a lot of fibers in the carpet, right? And the monist says, when you see the different bricks and the different chairs and different people and different persons here, you are seeing an illusion. That's not real. You are seeing what they call in Hindu, Maya. The Hindus call this Maya, the illusion of diversity. You think you see a lot of different things, but because you have been trained in an illusion, you see this diversity. You have to overcome the illusion that there's a lot of things in this room. The illusion that there are a lot of bricks. And you have to learn to see again so that you see the underlying oneness of all being. Now, they don't mean that we're one in the sense that we all get along, we feel nice together, and we'll hold hands and hug and sway as we sing. No, that's not the kind of oneness they're talking about. They mean we are one thing. And that's it. That's all that exists. And they will help you to see that in different ways. First of all, the techniques include the use of drugs. In one of the key books for the movement called The Aquarian Conspiracy by Marilyn Ferguson, if you want to understand the New Age movement from their side of things, that's one of the best books to read, The Aquarian Conspiracy by Marilyn Ferguson. She has 8 passages where she recommends the use of hallucinogenic drugs and says things like, and I quote, "You cannot underestimate the role of drugs in bringing people to the New Age mentality. The drugs alter your consciousness so that you see the oneness." Second, they use breathing exercises of different types. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not against breathing. I like it. I want to keep doing it. I intend to do it. I'm hoping that this is about halfway point for me. I'm 46, so I'm looking to be about 90. So until then, I want to keep breathing. So breathing is good. But what some people use is breathing techniques to get you high and alter your consciousness. That's one of their favorite words, get into an altered state of consciousness. And in that altered state of consciousness, you stop seeing the differences. The differences fade away, and you see the oneness instead. And that's the goal of breathing exercises. Same thing is true with yoga. I know a lot of people suggest that we use yoga in order to do exercise, to limber up, to keep in good shape, etc. I'm here to tell you that after having practiced yoga myself, I was involved in the New Age movement before it was called the New Age movement, back in the early 70s when I was in college. And when I read yoga and studied yoga, the yogis made it very, very clear that the purpose of yoga is not physical exercise. You might get that as a secondary benefit. But again, I would invite you to read books by the yogis. Not the FDC where, you know, do yoga in the morning on the TV shows. Read some of the yogis themselves. What do they say about their yoga? And they say the same thing again and again and again when you read their books. Namely, that yoga is there to help alter your consciousness. To help you see the oneness of all being. To be at one. By regulating your breathing, because they use breathing exercises very strongly in yoga, that's called pranayama, and as well as the various physical exercises, you know, in hatha yoga especially, but there are a variety of types of yoga. Whether it be kundalini or any other form of it, the goal is always to alter your consciousness so that you see the oneness of all being and you no longer see the illusion that there are a lot of people and things here. That's its goal. Another technique that these people like to use is hypnosis. Quite a number of the New Age techniques will hypnotize participants. The best example and the most successful financially is Jose Silva's Silva Mind Control. Have you heard of that? Yeah, it's probably been around sometimes in your schools, huh? And Jose Silva says this isn't hypnosis. He writes this. He'll say it again and again. It's not hypnosis. But he also writes, this is self-hypnosis. Well, what is the difference? It's not, you see, the difference he's trying to get at is who hypnotizes you. He says, I don't hypnotize him. You hypnotize yourself. But you're still in a hypnotic trance. And there are a lot of ways in which people get into this hypnotic trance and alter their state of being. They alter the state of mind, the state of consciousness, by being in this hypnotic trance. Again, to see beyond the differences, beyond the illusions, and to see the oneness. And to become one with the universal mind. That's part of what Jose Silva's belief is. God is all mind. And when you go into his alpha state, as he calls it, which he claims is when your brain waves vibrate between 7 and 14 cycles per second, which is not alpha state, by the way. It's 6 to 12 cycles. He knows that it's 6 to 12 cycles. He admits that. But 7 is a more mystical number than 6. So he changed it. Now, when you know something is true, and you don't say what is true because it doesn't sound as nice to your theory, we usually have another word for that in English. It's not a nice word. But he does that, and other groups have followed suit. A good deal of what people say about EST, Erhard Seminar Training. Have you heard of EST? Or the Forum? Started by Werner Erhard, alias Jack Frost, alias Jack Rosenberg, a car salesman from Philadelphia, who went, you know, left his wife, his first wife and kids, changed his name on the airplane, and flew out to California, started a whole new life and a whole new seminar. He was a salesman for books and other things, besides a seminar called EST. And a big part of EST was hypnosis, that had the people do hypnotic trance through relaxation techniques. And then get people to do some very odd things. Standing up, you know, and being screamed at and stared at and yelled at. People would go into such an emotional state during the seminar that they would start crying, sobbing, screaming, pounding the floor, defecating and urinating in their clothes, vomiting. They would just lose total control. And then at the end of that, he would say, now, you've gone through all this, you've got it. You got it all right. It, and that's one thing he tried to say. What was it? He said, it is when you realize that everything that is, everything that isn't, isn't. That's only going to cost you $1,800 to figure that out. Everything that is, everything that isn't, isn't. That's it. And you pay a lot of money to find that out. My daddy could have told you that a lot cheaper. Well, his basic technique, though, is, like Jose Silva, a form of hypnosis. And this is not unusual, you know, in these groups. Now, why do they use drugs, breathing exercises, yoga, and hypnosis? They have all sorts of theories. One of the most popular, and you hear this a lot from folks. You should know about some of this. They have a theory based on research on epileptic patients in the 1930s. When neurologists, neurosurgeons would cut the corpus callosum. The corpus callosum is a narrow band about 1 inch wide of nerves in the middle of the top of your brain. And when, in the 30s, they would sever that to reduce the seriousness of epileptic seizures. And it worked somewhat. Now we can do it with drugs. They don't do this anymore. But in the 30s, they didn't have some of the drugs that we have today to help epileptics. So they would cut that. And then when they cut it, they realized other things. For instance, that logic, the formation of words, using sentence structure, and organizing thought logically, takes in mathematics, science, take place on the left side of the brain. While a lot of artistic qualities took place on the right side of the brain. Now, this is very simplistic, because the brain is much more complex than all this, but the New Agers didn't get stopped by the complexity. They reduced it down to something so simple it became silly. And they started saying, well, what you have to learn how to do is shut off the left side of your brain with its logic, because it's logic and the left side and reason that help you take all these things apart in the first place. That's why you don't see the whole picture. You're using logic to take everything in the pieces. So get into the right side of the brain, and then you'll see things holistically, artistically, mystically. This is the what they're trying to do. And drugs, they try to say, and Marilyn Ferguson and others try to say, that drugs blow out the circuits on the left side of your brain and free up the circuits on the right side of your brain. I'm here to tell you that that analysis is lame brain. That is simply not true. When you take a hallucinogenic drug, it does not isolate the left side of your brain. It destroys neurons throughout your whole the neurological system. And believe me, I know folks who took LSD in 68, and they still have flashbacks almost 30 years later because of destruction of nerve connections, you know, that were not just on the left side. You know, it'd be funny talking to a friend of mine. You'd be talking, and all of a sudden, and then he comes back. He said, "Where were you?" I know him well enough to know that he's, you know, having flashbacks. But he, you know, this is one of the results of using drugs. They don't destroy or blow out circuits on the left side of your brain. That's stupid. Stupid as a stick. And the same thing is true with breathing exercises. You can't isolate. The brain is always, unless you cut the corpus callosum, the brain is always interacting and working together. It's too complex. But these people create this myth that get out of your left side into your right side, and then you'll see holistically, and you'll see the oneness of all being. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. So we have to, undercut that with scientific facts. And deal with the way things really are. Now, there I go again, being left brain. I want scientific facts again. but I'm going to insist on that constantly because they're the ones who brought up pseudoscience by talking about left brain, right brain in the first place, aren't they? Well, let's deal with real science and don't let them get away with that stuff. Now, the question that the New Agers have to ask after a certain point is that if everything is one being, and there's a oneness to all reality, and I can feel this oneness. That's one of the things they love. They want to feel the oneness. They don't want to think it, because that's too left brain. They want to feel the oneness, and that's why they use the drugs, the breathing exercises, yoga, and hypnosis. They want to feel this oneness and just become one with everything. The next question is, what is this one being? If everything is one, what is it? And this is the most important doctrine of the New Age movement. Everything is God. This floor is God. It's not that God lives, and believe me, they don't like it when Christians say, well, God exists in the floor. Yes, he does. And the floor would not exist unless it existed in God, and God existed in it. That's not what they mean. They don't like that. Why? Because when you say that God exists in the floor and in the chairs, you are making a distinction between God and the floor. That's not what the New Ager means. There is no distinction between God and the floor. God is the floor. God is the chairs. God is the air. And it's okay for you to sit on God or walk on God because you're God too. So it's okay for God to walk on God. Don't worry about it. They also say that there is a hierarchy of being. Some things are more God than others or manifest God more clearly than others. Virgin rainforests more so than the ones planted by the forestry companies. That's better. So protect virgin forests. That is part of what's going on among some environmentalists. That they want to protect the virgin forest because that's a higher level of being than the ones planted by the forestry companies. And you never know what critters might be in there. Like various diseases too, but they're God. The animals are higher manifestations of God than the trees are. And some animals even more so, like, sorry about you people from New Bedford, but whales, they are big on the scale. Dolphins and porpoises, they're high on the scale of being God. Because dolphins and porpoises are reincarnated people from the lost continent of Atlantis. Remember Atlantis sank into the ocean, right? Well, those people had to become reincarnated, and they became reincarnated as dolphins. So people are going to SeaWorld to talk to the dolphins and gain New Age wisdom from them. Now, I like dolphins. Don't get me wrong. I think they are cool. I would love to have one of my own if I didn't have to take care of it. But I mean, they are a cool animal, no doubt. It'd be fun to do, and I'll talk about dances with dolphins later on. But, you know, these people really believe that these are reincarnations from Atlantis. Or Lemuria, a continent that sank in the Pacific basin. And that these dolphins are trying to give us New Age crystals and New Age wisdom. And so they want to talk to them and listen. And so, and of course, the whales have their own records out now. And those are very popular among New Agers. And top sellers. And most importantly of all, in terms of being God and on the scale of showing off God's power, are people. We are the highest manifestations of God. And that's important because unlike the whales, the dolphins, or the rainforests, we can pay for the seminars. They can't. And we can read and buy the books the other animals can't. So this is a big part of the emphasis. And it's a standard shtick in these lectures to have them say you are God. You just don't realize. And as far as the New Age movement is concerned, the key problem of existence is that you don't yet realize that you are God. And if you take my seminar, you will realize it. Now again, don't get it confused with the Christian doctrine that by virtue of baptism and God's grace, the Holy Trinity indwells in our souls. They don't like that doctrine at all because you are distinguishing your soul from God. When you say God dwells in your soul, you are therefore saying your soul is not God. They are saying that your soul, your higher self, is God. And you simply need to get in contact with God. And if the world got in contact with its divinity and with the innate divinity of each person, we would solve all of the world's problems. They promise this, they teach it, and they get people to believe this quite a bit. Now, it may cost you a fair amount of money to take this seminar. And it's interesting how much they go after the Catholic Church, especially. They attack us. They attack us quite a bit. And they'll say, well, they're just in it for the money and stuff. Well, they're charging you $900 for a weekend retreat to hear how much money we try to get from people. Now, and that $900 does not include room or board. That is just to be there. You got to take care of your own room and board. There's a woman in Yelm, Washington, named J.Z. Knight, who is charging $900 for a weekend retreat. Fire department only allowed her to have 1,000 people. She would fill the place every retreat. Fill it. Now, you do your mathematics. When I add that up, it comes up to $900,000. No room and board included. And once she sells the shirts, the hats, the cups, the tapes, lots of books, all this, the whole beef about everything else, she's pulling in a cool mill on a weekend. That's a lot of money. A lot of money. Matter of fact, her husband contracted the AIDS virus while having homosexual affairs while married to her. And I couldn't believe it when I read it. This is in the front page of the New York Times, you know, that he went to her spirit. See, she channels a spirit named Ramtha, who's a very ascended master. Shirley MacLaine used to really like Ramtha until there are accusations of phoniness. As a matter of fact, Shirley MacLaine was one time talking to Ramtha, who's a spirit from the continent of Atlantis, not speaking to a dolphin, but in this housewife in Yelm, Washington. And she was staring into Ramtha's beautiful eyes, and she said, Ramtha, because Shirley MacLaine started to cry, Ramtha, you used to be my brother in Atlantis. Get the truck. But the spirit Ramtha speaks through this woman, J.Z. Knight. People will fill up the place for $900. And she starts off by going into hypnotic trance. She starts off with hypnosis, self-hypnosis. She sits down, hypnotizes herself. Her chin goes down, down, down as she does so. Does deep breathing exercises. Then she wakes up and she stamps her feet. And she goes up to the audience, indeed, and they all start yelling back, indeed, and it goes all around the audience, indeed, and they yell back, indeed. And she says, in a fake British type accent, you are gods, indeed. And if Ramtha were to cut off your arm, indeed, you can grow back a new one, indeed. And they all yell back, indeed. Why vote Jay-Z Knight tries that before anybody else? Cutting off your arm because you can grow back a new one because you're God. And her husband, after he got AIDS, went up to her spirit and asked her spirit, speaking through her, should I take drugs, AZT, or not? And Ramtha said, you are God. You do not need this AZT. You just do it on you heal yourself. Physician, heal thyself. That's what she quotes. Out of context. Remember when Jesus said that? In Luke chapter 4, when Jesus was in Nazareth, and he says, perhaps you will quote to me the saying, physician, heal thyself. These people quote that as something Jesus was teaching. Christ was quoting somebody else saying, physician, heal thyself. Ramtha and the spirit say, physician, heal thyself. You are God. You can heal yourself. So her husband listened to her and didn't take ACT. And then later on, he sued her because he got so much more sick. And he sued her for giving her bad medical advice. Well, why did you ask her? You've been cheating on her and you're asking her for advice? What did you expect? And that's how I've been dumb as a stick. Now, I can't believe, you know, this is one of the great things about studying the New Age movement. I don't need to make any of this stuff up. They give me all this material. It's unbelievable. Well, the amazing thing, though, and this is what boggles my mind, is how many Catholics, including, you know, I was in one town in another state giving some lectures on the New Age movement, and a priest asked me about his associate. He said, have you ever heard of J.G. Knight? My associate goes there once a month. Now you'd look at this and it sounds so stupid to go listen to this lady say you are God. But here is a priest of Jesus Christ heading down to, or heading up in that case to Washington State once a month to do these seminars. And I told him, you gotta make that boy fish or cut bait. And you gotta call him yourself. He's your associate. You call him to decide, is he for Christ or for this false God? And you're getting to be for Christ. But, you know, this is what, an example to me of, it's not some fringe kook that buys into J.G. Knight. The average person is college educated, middle class, usually white. And more often than not, 40% of people get involved in this are Catholic. Even though we are only 25% of the country's population. We are disproportionately highly represented in these groups. People are buying into this. That's why it's important to know you're not the one who's dumb as a box of rocks. They are. And it's important not to get caught up and call people out of it. Well, sir, her spiel is, again, to constantly call people that you are God, and all of these spirits, these channeled spirits, whether it be J.G. Knight's Ramtha or Jane Roberts' Seth or Lazarus, or any of these other spirits, they're always saying the same thing. You are God. Matter of fact, they even had in New York City, where else? They could have been in San Francisco or Los Angeles. But they had an amateur hour for spiritists, spirit channelers, where the spirits would come on this show. As far as I know, they could have had Ted Mack as the MC still. Being dead apparently doesn't stop you. But you could call in and just contact these channelers. And you look in the TV shows today, how many 900 numbers are being advertised? You know how expensive it is to advertise on television. Do you think that they're taking a loss by advertising those 900 numbers? Where you can call for $3 a minute? Now, and you do your homework on that. You do your math. If it's $3 a minute, how much is that an hour? Is $90 an hour a little more than most of you make? A lot more than I make. But that's what they're paying. $90 an hour to talk to spirits and spiritists. And they're making a killing doing that on TV. They'll have a whole bank of phones that are ringing off the hook. That's why they can afford to put that advertising on television for these spiritists. 900 numbers. And some charge $4 an hour. That's $120 an hour at $4 a minute. Others are only $2. The semi-pro is only $2 a minute. But it adds up quickly, doesn't it? And, you know, you have to really, you know, examine what is it that, you know, we're allowing our culture to get into. With this belief in being God, and that you can contact various spirits who are also God, helping you to become God, that these spirits are sent to help raise our consciousness. We have to pay attention to some very, very important elements in the New Age movement's belief that everything is God. As I've started saying, the main problem in life, as far as the New Age is concerned, is that you don't realize you are God. You don't realize your divinity yet. But, and the problem of life is not a moral question. I cannot, this is one of the most important things to understand about these people. In the New Age movement, everything is God, correct? This is their basic belief. If everything is God, then evil does not exist. There is no such thing as sin because everything is God. Let me give you a couple quotes. Swami Muktananda, who says, in my ashram, we do not distinguish between good and evil. Same Swami Muktananda, who teaches, don't be so critical of Hitler and Stalin. After all, they are God too. In the New Age belief, in anybody's pantheistic belief, you have to accept that Adolf Eichmann is God. What happened at Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen, Dachau, and the other concentration camps, Treblinka, that was God doing that to God. So it was okay. Don't, as a matter of fact, one of their other favorite quotes from Christ is, judge not. That, and they'll stop there. And they hate her if anybody is judgmental. How can you be judgmental of Adolf Hitler? Pretty easy for me. I have no problem saying what that man did was evil. I have no problem saying that what Joseph Stalin did was evil. What I have a problem saying, I can't say if he's in hell. The church won't say that. That's where I can't be judgmental. And I cannot judge his soul. I can't say that Judas Iscariot is in hell, or Hitler, or Stalin, or any of those people. That's not my business. That is pure, who goes to heaven, who goes to hell, is what I call a management question. I'm purely in sales. That's not my department. God is the one who judges who goes to heaven or hell. I preach the gospel. But part of my preaching the gospel is that when God, the main manager, says that murdering people is a sin and you will go to hell if you commit murder, adultery, fornication, you know, and all these other things that St. Paul mentions. You commit these sins and you cannot go to heaven. And I mean, the only alternative is to go to hell. That's a management decision. And I have to say that that is wrong. And I will say that what Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, and the other great, you know, genocidists of this century, and the abortionists and the rest of them do, is immoral. Evil. New Agers don't want to do that. As a matter of fact, and this is part of the tragedy, two doctors, one in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and another one in New Jersey, said that it's okay for me to do abortions because I'm just helping that child go to another life. They'll be reincarnated in a better life. Well, who put you in charge? Who put you in charge of incarnations? And we'll talk about reincarnation a little bit later on. That's nonsense. But you can't call that wrong. And in general, most of the New Agers don't want you to condemn the sins that they themselves commit, which are usually in the sexual realm. That's generally the case. Most New Agers aren't murderers and thieves, at least certainly not directly thieves. And, you know, but they have a lot of affairs. And they don't want God to judge them. They want to be loved and accepted unconditionally. Well, I want them loved, and God does love them unconditionally. And I want to love them unconditionally. But my dad's unconditional love included making a little bit of red highliner along my bottom when I needed to learn a few lessons better than I was learning them. That was unconditional love. And he said it would hurt him more than it hurt me. I didn't believe that. But I did get the point. That highlighter, that red highlighter on my behind worked real well. And I said, I don't do this anymore. And, you know, that was not being judgmental or mean. That was my dad saving my life. You know, I liked to play with matches when I was a little boy. That was dumb. Really dumb. But I got the point. You don't do that anymore. And I still don't. Well, the same thing with God's law. God gives us his commandments because he doesn't want us to play with spiritual matches. You know, you probably have seen those studies that came out recently. People who go to church on Sunday live 5 years longer than people who don't. Did you see that? No, you didn't see that. Well, we read our papers in Texas. You guys are going to have to do some. Come on down. Yeah, the people who live, there's a number of studies showing that people who attend church on a weekly basis have lived 5 years longer, have fewer heart attacks, less serious heart attacks, lower blood pressure. And a couple other things say even better sexual relations. I wasn't part of that survey, so I don't know. But these are the things that they're saying goes on. You know, that God gives us a commandment to go to church on Sunday because it's good for us. And there's concrete evidence of how good it is. You know, these people don't want you to be judgmental. And they don't want to say that anything is wrong. As a matter of fact, you know, one of my favorite quotes from Shirley MacLaine is when she says, you know, not to be judgmental and don't use the left side of your brain. So she says, don't think. And then in bigger print, all capital letters, don't think. And bigger print, don't think. And finally, a fourth time, big print, don't think. This is one of the few things about Shirley MacLaine I believe. She doesn't think. And I wish she did. I wish she did. It'd be good for her. Actually, I think she's brilliant. She's a brilliant actress. But she's not a good theologian. And she got caught up into this new age mentality that gets you into a closed circle. You have to start believing these things. You have to get trapped in it. Once you believe that everything is God, you can't believe that there is such a thing as evil, because God isn't evil. Well, we know that. We agree God isn't evil. God is all good. But they then say, well, if everything is God, then everything is all good. You just don't realize it. And they also go on to think that because you are God, whatever thoughts you think, you therefore create. This is one of their basic corollaries from their thoughts. Whatever you think, you create, because you are God. So if you think about sins, you create those actions. That's one of their beliefs. If you think about murder, you create the murders. It went so far that in the EST seminars I mentioned before by Earhart Seminar Trainings on the Forum, they were telling people in the seminars that the Jews created the Nazi parties and the concentration camps. They were saying this kind of nonsense. And that it's the Jews' own responsibility, it's their own responsibility to create all that. That's why it happened. They wanted it to happen. They made it happen because they thought about it. Now this is nonsense. Nonsense. And this is one of the sad ramifications of their thought that I don't think they really work through. We'll see it more clearly as I talk about reincarnation. These people tend to blame victims for what happens to them. Now, their goal, in one hand, is a kind of a good one. They want to say, you are God, and because you are God, you are responsible. You create your own reality. Whatever happens to you, you cause it to happen. You make it. That's a very basic corollary to being God. And then, if you create this reality, then the thing that happens is you're responsible for whatever you create. And they want you to be responsible. Now, their idea is this. If you realize, this is Vernon Earhart and Shirley and all these other people, this is typical New Age. That if you realize you are responsible for whatever happens to you, you create whatever happens to you. If you get raped, you created the rapist. If you get robbed, you created the thief. If you get murdered, you created the murderer. You drew him to you. But if you don't understand that principle, they'll say that therefore change what you're thinking about to positive things, and then you will create positive realities. You see how they're thinking there? You think negative stuff, and you're God, so you create the negative stuff you think about. But if you think positive thoughts, you will create positive realities. You will make good things happen. That's also why they can charge you $1,500 or $400, whatever they charge for the seminars. They can charge you all that money because you will create more money than you've spent. Sure, this is an investment. If I charge you $1,500, that's an investment that will motivate you to desire to create more money. You can create all the money you want. Just think those thoughts. You will get it. I'll never forget meeting one woman who had been raised a Catholic, became a New Age teacher. She made $1.5 million in a year selling her tapes and talks. And then all of a sudden the other New Agers started to have a feeding frenzy. They sued her for taking their ideas. She ended up losing $1.5 million. And another $500,000 besides. And so she said, well, I started listening to my own tapes. And I started doing it. I sat on my tapes and I was doing the meditations and nothing happened. It got worse and worse and worse. I lost more than what I had gained. And I was impoverished as a result. And I realized this doesn't work. That's when she came back to the Catholic faith. And she felt so foolish. And that's often the way these people feel when they come back home. They feel so foolish. You know, I urge them to learn from what they did and help other people to get out of it. You know, eventually I wouldn't mind starting a network to help these people to communicate. Maybe I have to get a website. I could never find time. But this is some of what they have to deal with in their movement. Now, let me also deal with a very important doctrine of reincarnation. I've alluded to it a couple times already. Reincarnation is an extremely important doctrine in that flows from believing you are God. One of the great scenes in Shirley MacLaine's book, Out on a Limb, which another Christian Protestant guy named Legard Smith parodied by writing a book, Out on a Broken Limb. But in the book and then also in the movie, Shirley MacLaine made a movie based on this book about her own life. And again, she's ingenious in her book. That's why she was selling $40 million a year worth of her books. Just Shirley selling $40 million. It's amazing. Three Americans and one Brit were going across Australia. They sold $150 million worth of books between the four of them. You know, here and in Australia, not just in that one trip. But anyway, Shirley is ingenious. And what she does is she tells you a story about one of her romances. This is how she hooks you in. And you start to say, oh, that poor Shirley, what she doesn't go through. I hear that darling, she gets up with these men and they just treat her like dirt. It's terrible. And they're such nice looking boys and they just don't treat her right. And you feel sorry for her. You know, these men, you know, get into these, you know, dumb and wrong romances. And while she's trying to deal with the problems caused by the romance, she starts going into the New Age stuff. And while she starts to go through her New Age conversion to help her deal with this, you've already empathized with her love life and said, oh, surely, oh, you're getting some help. You know, you're sort of cheering her on, but you are also getting converted to her ideology. Now, this is ingenious. I don't know if she's doing that consciously or not, but it's absolutely ingenious. And that's why people love her stuff. Well, in this one movie, actually, she's dealing with, I think it was a British lover, British diplomat who was just leading her along. She's met up with a guru, and the guru is teaching, surely you just got to admit that you're God and just accept it. And she says, okay, I'm God. He says, no, Shirley, say it like you mean it. So Shirley stands on the ocean beach at Malibu before they burned it down. And she's standing there in front of the Pacific Ocean. And she's saying, I'm God. I'm God. I'm God. And she's saying that the sun is going down, the violins come up, and they break to a commercial. Great scene. Great television. What I noticed, though, before they broke, surely, unlike God when he came here, did not walk on the water. She stayed right where she was. Those nice designer clothes, they're not going to go in that ocean. And here, I think we have something that she would admit. I know she would admit. She does. And there was the same with the rest of them. That they have not yet evolved to the fullness of their divinity. Now, this gets to a couple beliefs. A, these people are strongly committed to belief in evolution. Not just physical evolution. They mean personal and social evolution. And that you have to evolve into becoming God. This is one of their basic beliefs. And as you evolve into becoming God, you know, you do this by living a spiritual life and so on. But you don't show all of the divine powers in this lifetime. What happens when you die? Well, you come back until you're finished. That's why they believe in reincarnation. You have to have your soul continue to evolve from one life to another. Now, this is called the law of karma. And the law of cause and effect. We have to make some important distinctions. This is not the Hindu doctrine of karma. Not the Hindu doctrine at all. In Hinduism, karma is a belief that if you do something bad, then something bad equal to that will happen to you in this life or the next life. If you do something good, then something good will happen to you, if not in this life, then in the next life. That's the Hindu doctrine, the karma. Now, the New Agers can't accept that, can they? Because they don't believe in good and evil. So you can't say, well, it's something good or bad. Everything is good. And there's another thing, too, that they don't like, the Hindu doctrine of the hierarchy of being. In Hinduism, humans have a hierarchy. So that if you are a bad man, you'll be punished in the next life by becoming a woman. Now, that's Orthodox Hinduism. In Hinduism, a woman is a lower level of vibration than a man. And if you remain bad as a woman, you go down to the next lowest caste. And if you keep this up and keep being bad, you'll go down to be an untouchable. And an untouchable woman, that's really low. And if you still insist on being bad, then you come back as an animal. That's nothing below an untouchable woman. But if you are good, you women get to come back as men. If you're Hindus. Lucky you, right? Did you just see that the other day? They did some research that men's brains shrink faster than women's as we get older. And we lose our hair and we die 5 years younger. So, you know, I don't know what you're looking forward to, but the Hindus believe, and then eventually you become a Brahmin. You go up to the highest caste, which is to be a Brahmin. And if you become a Brahmin priest and a man in the Brahmin caste, then your next stage is to become a Brahma cow and then a Brahma bull. All right? Because the Brahma bull is the highest level of being and consciousness on the planet Earth. And after you've been a bull enough times and been a really good Brahma bull, then you spin off and you become nothing. Okay? That is the goal of Hinduism. That you cease to exist. That is the goal of Hinduism. You cease to exist. Now, the New Agers don't like that. And there's no way Shirley MacLaine is going to say that coming back as a man is higher than being a woman. No, what they say in the New Age movement is, no, you learn different lessons. Sometimes you come back as a woman, sometimes you come back as a man. This is in Ruth Montgomery, this is accepted among a number of New Agers. Homosexuals are women who came back as men, but didn't quite give up being all about being a woman. They didn't quite get it yet. So I have to come back again as a man so they really get what it's like to be a man who's heterosexual rather than homosexual. Or same thing for, of course, for lesbians. This is their explanation of this stuff. Black people, African Americans, are white slave owners who come back and they need to deal with the karma of the other side of being black, because once they had owned blacks, now they have to become black. Now, they're not saying that that's a punishment, because there's no sin, therefore you can't get, there is no such thing as punishment in the New Age movement, because sin doesn't exist. It's not a sin to own slaves, but if you own slaves, then you have to learn the other lesson of what it's like to be a black oppressed by whites. And if you commit a rape, that's not a sin, but you have to come back in another life and get raped so that you can learn that lesson too. And if you commit murder, that's not a sin. That's a very hard lesson, and you have to come back in another life and get murdered. And according to the New Age, and again, it's not Hinduism at all. In Hinduism, this happens automatically and impersonally. In the New Age movement, you choose when you're going to come back to be murdered or raped, if you've done one of those crimes, or when you'll be black. You choose. You're going to be a man or woman or homosexual or lesbian or straight or whatever. You choose all that. That's totally up to you. So you are totally responsible for whatever happens to you in this life. And you have to learn those lessons. You want to get a good New Age catechism on this. Rent the movie Defending Your Life. It's in the video stores. It even has a little spot with Shirley in it. But get that movie. I strongly recommend it. You'll see what I mean about what they believe about reincarnation. And how frequently the guy who's the judge, the guy who died says, well, did I do anything wrong? He says, no, you don't understand. There is no such thing as wrong. The issue is, did you learn your lesson? This is standard New Age belief. Now, again, think of this in terms of behavior. Again, you are blaming the rape victim for choosing to be raped. That was their choice. If you get cancer, it's because you chose cancer. If you get murdered, you chose to be murdered. You wanted that to happen. This is your chance to make up for karma from another life. You needed to learn this lesson. It wasn't bad. It's another lesson you needed to learn. And so you're learning it. You can see how these people in the New Age movement they're not going to be teaching solid morals. If their approach to moral thinking enters into our society too deeply, we are in very deep trouble. We're already in trouble. We are already in big trouble morally. With 23,000 murders a year last year, and that was down from 26,000 the year before. Thank goodness. But we're in deep trouble. Not to mention the abortions. Not to mention the other crimes, you know, rape and violence. You know, we're in deep trouble. We have to make very clear moral teaching. And this doctrine of reincarnation is not something to joke about. So when I come back, I'm going to come back as a dog. So at least somebody will feed me. No. This isn't a joke. This is very serious, and it has serious moral ramifications. We have to be clear on teaching what Christ taught about the resurrection of the dead and eternal life. And it's life, as a matter of fact, they say, well, the Bible used to teach reincarnation. I said, no, but it teaches in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, is you die once and then comes the judgment. My question to the New Ager is, what part of once don't you understand? What part of once is unclear to you? You die once and comes the judgment. These are some of the basic ideas. It's time for us to take a break. Why don't we do that, take a few minutes. Elias has a couple announcements, and then we'll come back and I'll entertain your questions and deal with my last point, okay?